This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Pretty tight game. I mean, it was a hard-fought game where I thought in the second period with the Paterka breakaway, with Tuck and Thompson that were kind of in alone, and we didn't convert. You know, had the goal taken away that you really feel could have went either way. And then we just didn't defend. We didn't defend that last play. We had our guy at the side of the net. I thought Kozak ate one for the team there, but in an opportune time to give up a shot like that. It's not on our goalie.
Welcome in. It's Sabres Live, and if you've listened at any point over the last few years, you know that Marty and I don't like being repetitive and redundant, but I did lead the show Wednesday by saying you can't make this stuff up, and unfortunately I'm having to say it had nothing to do with the Sabres on Wednesday, but yeah. Marty, we're still sitting here trying to process how the game got away from them in an advantageous situation late when they, I think they played well enough that it's reasonable to assume they could have tied the game last night when they had the goalie out.
They could have tied the game. They could have taken a lead in the game early in the second period. And we talk about the goalie interference. So there was two moments in the game that obviously were huge, and that people, if in 10 years from now, you're like, hey, remember the first trip to Utah for the Buffalo Sabres? You're going to say, oh yeah, that's the game they got a goal taken away for goalie interference in Beck Malenstein. And that's the game that, unfortunately, on the delayed penalty, Tage Thompson tries to go back to Darlene, goes off the board, and it's a own goal while a delayed penalty. Like, that never happens. We've seen own goals, when you pull the goalie at the end of a game, or, when there's a delayed penalty, but not at the end of the game like this when you're trying to tie the game, right? And that's the unfortunate one right here. And I'm listening to Tage after the game and rewatching the play. He says, I didn't realize it was a delayed penalty. And look, the referee in the zone never had his arm up. The guy in the neutral zone did, and when the infraction happened, Tage is not facing the neutral zone. So if he looked at the guy in the corner and said, oh, he doesn't have his arm up, he keeps playing, and he's not searching for the other referee, but it's just there was a good amount of time for at least somebody to yell, delayed penalty, delayed penalty, delayed penalty, like something for him to realize that it happened, but obviously that didn't play out.
Incredibly, as producer Jeff and you and I and probably some others have gone back and watched it, there actually was a lot unfolding on that play. And incredibly, it's moot now, but you think that maybe it wouldn't have been called a penalty in a certain situation?
It would have been called because it wasn't, like, Bo Byram wasn't injured or bleeding. But when Stenlin comes in and pitchforks Bo Byram's stick, it's actually Byram's own stick that catches himself in the face. So if there would have been blood on the play, then it would have been up for review, and then they would have realized, oh, It was Byram's own stick. Mm-hmm. So there's no penalty on the plate. But the other thing is when Byram's stick is on the ice, McBain is right there as Byram is trying to go back to get his stick. And McBain swipes the stick to the corner, which is clear interference. But by that point, Thompson has the puck and he's going back and it's hit the boards and it's going. So nobody's watching Byram trying to go get his stick because everybody's paying attention to, oh my God, Thompson's going to score in his own goal on that play.
And we just had, it was Paterka, was it not? Who swept a stick away a few games back.
Which was 45 feet away from the guy.
Uh-huh. And we also had a similar situation to last night as far as give him the puck, give him the puck, give him the puck with Tampa. So, like, it's, I think a lot of this stuff is so top of mind right now. Like, it looks familiar. And familiarity here just breeds more frustration, right?
Yeah, and it's mental mistakes that it looks familiar. And look, if you lose a game because the puck went off the referee and like Toronto scoring against Colorado the other day, and you, like, man, we can't catch a break because everything, it goes off the Zamboni door and into the net or off the referee or whatever, right?
We're like, still paying for Porky Palmer's sins.
Exactly.
We're
still talking about Porky Palmer at the odd kicking the door out. But, you know, there's a way that maybe you're like, man, we are being cursed right now. Mm-hmm. But this is different. This is, okay, these are moments you're playing peewee hockey. And if you know there's a delayed penalty and on a man advantage. So the reason why you don't give the puck away on a regular second period, Utah has a delayed penalty. Well, you don't give it away. Why? Because you pull your goalie, you're 6-on-5. So you have a man advantage. If you can play 30, 40 seconds with that man advantage, then you get a 2-minute power play. So technically, maybe you got a 2-minute and 40-second man advantage. But this situation is different because you already have pulled your goalie to try to gain an advantage. So you're 6-on-5. By giving him the puck late in the game, you're trying to go 6-on-4 for the longer time. So that's why this is a different situation. Usually you don't give the puck up on a regular penalty being called. Mm-hmm. You give the puck up when it's a 5-on-4, and then there's a penalty being assessed to the shorthanded team, so you want to go 5-on-3. You don't want to go 5-on-4 longer and then 5-on-3 shorter. So, But those situations, you learn from a very young age, especially if you play high-level hockey, You learn that, hey, this is when you got to give the puck to the other team. And that's why it was automatic for Razor and Dan to say, oh, give him the puck, because you know you want to be 6-on-4 late in the game to tie it up.
Yeah. And then, of course, if the more you think about hypotheticals and similar situations, like if you're in a 5-on-3 and, you know, the team takes a penalty, like, it's time o'clock and stuff like that. But like, if you have those three hemmed in already and at the end of a long shift and you see, you know, a likely advantageous situation, you're not automatically going to give the puck up there.
On a 5-on-3, you're actually not giving the puck up because the penalty that's going to be added gets added already to the first penalty that's on the board. Yeah. So you're not gaining a time advantage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're on a 5-on-3 and you're wearing the other team down, you're trying to stay on that 5-on-3 and it doesn't change. And again, that's when you have that situation maybe happened before. You come back to the bench. The coach says, hey, why did you give him the puck? Oh, they had a penalty. And well, yeah, but it doesn't change the where the penalties are going to fit. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen after. So there's obviously moments like this. But Tage, after the game, you know, said, I didn't know. And I'm not here to say, oh, well, Tage knew and he made a bad play. No, I'm going to take his word since he didn't know. But if he's going to say he didn't know, then there was 5 other players on the ice. There was Jack Quinn with the puck originally. There's Zucker in the corner. There's Dahlin at the blue line that when he saw Byram gets, you know, what, the high stick, the Stenlin penalty, like he probably looked at one referee, no, and he may have looked over his shoulder. Oh, he put his arm up. Like, yeah. There needs to be communication. So I'm going to say, Thompson said he didn't know. I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. But where is the other five guys and even the bench? The bench, like, slamming the stick. Give him the puck. Give him the puck. Like, they probably heard Razor because Razor was not in the 300 level. He was at ice level. So it's like they probably could even hear Razor say, give him the puck. And that didn't happen.
He might have been eating, too, so there might not have been clarity.
It was at the other end, though. Like, their location was in the Sabres end. If it had been in the offensive zone, he would have pulled his headset off and screamed to the top of his lung.
Well, it's now behind them. They have no choice but to look ahead to the next two on the trip, which is Minnesota tomorrow, Winnipeg on Sunday. And we, of course, are doing the same here on the show because we have Darren Dreger coming up, fresh off of, GM's meetings and a lot to unpack from the NHL last night in a 14-game extravaganza.
I wonder if last night, just quickly, Duffer, because we talked about the Malenstein no goal. I wonder if... Now, Kevin Adams went to the GM's meeting. They showed a bunch of clips, and the GMs kind of, like, reviewed them, and they said, I think it's a goal or no goal. Mm-hmm. Apparently, 52 out of the 54 that they showed, the GMs, not unanimously, but as a general story, said that was the right call. That one, I wonder if that was an email sent out last night right away saying, hey, you know what? There's one that I don't agree with. And obviously, I get it, right? Because it's a Sabres goal that gets wiped off the glass, the scoreboard. But there's two parts of the rule. One part of the rule says the player has to be in the crease interfering with the goaltender. And the other part is the goalie is inside his own crease and can't play the position. Like, if you look at it, Malenstein's not in the crease.
Sure he is.
He's not. I look at it and I'm like, he's...
Did you think it was going to stand?
I think depending on what, because it also looked like Malenstein's trying to avoid the goalie by being right on the edge.
I agree with that.
And that's a part of the rule book that says if the player makes an attempt to avoid the goaltender, then the goal should stand. Like, there's so many parts of the rule.
Because Corey Perry could use that excuse for 1,000 games.
That's why I'm saying the rule book needs to be rewritten.
And most of Corey's goals stood up, but this was long before we really tweaked the rule, right?
Oh, so. I tried to make an attempt, you know?
Yeah.
Although there was a funny one in Montreal yesterday. Juraj Slafkovský obviously made an attempt to avoid Sorokin. Yeah. He actually made an attempt to pull
himself off on the post.
That was pretty funny, but that goal counted.
When Slafkovský's... wide open legs, if you will, found their way around
straddled the post.
I immediately thought of the awkward looking video clip of David Riddick a couple years back.
Oh, when he hammered himself
himself off the crossbar.
Was it with the Nashville that he was?
In Toronto, I think.
In Toronto, yeah, he hammered himself with the post. But yeah, so the rule book is a little bit skewed in the way that there's different parts of the rule book that contradicts itself. We talked about that earlier this year. Yeah. And on that one, I thought this could stand depending on what part of the rule book they're focusing on.
Yeah, agreed. Because it goes back to many coaches, but we'll use the specific example of Lindy. Like, you don't know unless you challenge. Well, in this case, Utah challenged and they got the call right. I would say this, and it's certainly never 100% from my standpoint, but when I saw the first replay, I'm like, this is not a goal. But
when it took that long, I thought this is not going to be a goal.
I'm only basing it on like my first reaction.
Yeah. Would I have wanted that to count against Reimer or UPL? Probably not. I would have said
My first reaction has been wrong a lot this year, too, so I'm not sitting here patting my back like maybe some people have done on our shows. Anyway.
Can't see me, but I'm patting my own back.
Well, you're going to do so with less air on Tuesday. Sabres are teaming up with Bald for Bucks, and it's all going to go down on Tuesday night, but we want you to get involved now by donating $50 or more to receive the Bald for Bucks t-shirt. You can learn more at sabres.com/baldforbucks as Marty and Dan lose their locks for cancer research on Tuesday when Ottawa is in town. Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN with us now, fresh off. I would say but I don't want to put words in your mouth, Darren. An interesting general manager's meeting this year.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't designed around rule tweaks or rule changes, so there wasn't any heavy news that came out of the collection of general managers' meetings, but there was lots to talk about, right? And, you know, a good chunk of it was just the positivity around the National Hockey League and how good the game is. And, you know, very often on segments like this or just in media in general, we boil down statistics and what the data looks like. And you can invent reasons to have conversation about changes and all of that. But one of the takeaways for me was some of the offensive numbers that the NHL generated that are just facts, right? You know, I historically have been one who doesn't like the shootout and would do anything to emphasize even 3-on-3. And I think we've had this debate and this challenge on this show before. But then you see the data and it shows 75% of overtimes are decided 3-on-3. Right. Well, you know what? If the gimmick of the shootout is there for that 25%, okay, I can live with that. 10.5% shooting percentage in the National Hockey League right now. 10.5%. Now, when you think of some of the great shooters in the game, okay, well, that doesn't sound like a beefy number, but that's across the NHL. You know, success rate on power plays, almost 22%, things like that. So there were takeaways like that that I found interesting, I think is the best way to describe it. And then there was that full-scale debate, which everybody had on the goalie interference. And that was an interesting exercise by the National Hockey League because I think they wanted all of us in media to make sure we deliver the message out there that general managers are virtually in lockstep with hockey operations in how the video review of goalie interference is managed and ultimately called goal versus no goal. I mean, they went through 54 of the most difficult clips to this point of the season. And I think 52 of the 54, the general managers agreed on in majority with how it was called by the Situation Room in Toronto. So there were some things that we took away that were, again, intriguing.
Okay, so if I was at the GM's meeting, I would say the 10.5 shooting percentage is a bit flawed because this season we're getting an audit on the shots on goal.
Okay.
So there's not as many shots on goal. And then therefore the shooting percentage goes up and the save percentage goes down. But the number that I don't remember where I read it says there's been 700 less power plays at this time of year compared to last year.
Yeah.
The crackdown needs to happen. Like, there needs to be Duffer and I were watching the other day Buffalo and Boston.
Yeah.
They was literally slashing penalties with broken sticks, three of them in the game that were not called. Like, there needs to be a better emphasis on calling the rule book and the penalties.
And I can understand that. And I, you know, if you talked about a one-off, then all right, you know, you can easily push back and say, well, we can't say the standard has shifted because you can compare one game to another and it's going to be different. It's a different crew. But when you're talking about 700 penalties, I mean, that's a pretty hefty number. It is. So I'm not going to debate that. I would agree. And more penalties leads to power plays, which leads to offense, which is, you know, why fans will pay $200 or more to sit and watch that hockey game. The one thing, and I kind of had this conversation jokingly with some of the ex-officials who participate, you know, in the GM meetings about the standard that was applied at the Four Nations faceoff. You know, I mean, it was virtual prison rules at the Four Nations, but, you know, the hockey was terrific, you know, but, and look, the pace of play was elevated as to what you'd see normally in a regular season game. You're talking the best of the best and all of that, but they didn't really have an answer for any of it other than, hey, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to appreciate that judgment calls are made. Some are made correctly, some aren't, and some are missed. So that's kind of always the caveat when it comes to challenging the officiating standard in the NHL.
Yes, and not that I need to protect the shield as far as the NHL is concerned, but whenever this type of thing comes up, I say, just look at every other sport. Like every other sport goes through this. There is no perfection in officiating in any other sport. So let's not just wide brush it and say this is a hockey problem in NHL. It's sports we have to deal with. Now, you open the door for a wonderful segue for me because arguably the best game in the NHL last night, did have a shootout, and it was two elite teams in Tampa and Dallas, and five of the eight shooters scored against two of the best goaltenders in the game. And that leads me down the path of, does Dallas finally get an in-state rival soon in the form of a team in Houston?
Well, that's the talk, right? And it isn't new in terms of the idea of Houston becoming an NHL city. Is it through expansion? I mean, I guess that would be the only way, because when you talk to the commissioner, which we did this week, the viability, the health of all franchises right now has never been better. And I think we can appreciate that now that, you know, Arizona is Utah and you know, everybody else seems to be in real good standing aside from the Canadian dollar and some of the issues politically that are going on. Look, the group that seems to be most motivated in Houston is a group that isn't new to the National Hockey League. And that's what makes this, I think, more newsworthy is that the NHL isn't shutting the door on it, but nor is the NHL providing any sense of timeline. So what I would say is it's never a new thing when prospective buyers or groups approach the commissioner's office with interest in owning an NHL expansion franchise. In this case, it's pretty specific to Houston. And I think that that Houston market, it's a major market. And I think that the National Hockey League at one point would love to get in there. I do. And, you know, every time we ask Commissioner Bettman about expansion, he doesn't shut it down. What he says is there is no specific timeline. You know, which means they continue to have the conversations that are now being reported on specific to Houston, but they're not pinpointing when they may make that jump. And is it expanding by two teams to go to 34? Now you talk about the expansion dollars, which will be $2 billion or higher with a B. And there are lots of reasons, and all of them are revolving around dollar signs as to why you consider it. But I'm one, as I get older, that I grow weary a little bit here of the talent pool, to be fair, right? You know, and what is the expansion draft process going to look like again? Because as we all learned, not that Seattle is a tough team. They're a good team. You know, they just need a little bit more time to evolve and get better. But they're not what the Vegas Golden Knights were right out of the gate. And managers learn from that process in applying their draft protection with Seattle. So, you know, where are we getting all these players, I guess, would be a question. But nobody seems to be too concerned with it. So I do. I think we get expansion in the next 3 to 5 years. That's my timeline. That's not the NHL.
Yeah, I think you're... You know, 34 would be a good number, and then 36, and then we see what happens to 38. Yeah. And I think the league is going to continue to grow. There's a lot of money there, and it's a great league, and everybody wants a part of it. So, but you talk about dollar sign, and the cap is going to go up. And last season, the St. Louis Blues were bold with a couple of offer sheets. Well, you know what? Last night, those two offer sheets paid off.
Oh, yeah.
With Holloway scoring a 3-2 goal, and when Vancouver tied it up, Broberg won it in OT. Is this going to be a crazy summer with offer sheets? Because I have a feeling it will be.
Well, okay, but name some of these players, because teams learn from the example that was established by St. Louis and the Edmonton Oilers. You know, I don't think that you're going to get too many teams, and all it takes is one, I can appreciate that, who are going to box themselves in the way the Edmonton Oilers did. And mistakes were made in that process. And then Edmonton gets to a place where, okay, they don't have Broberg, they don't have Holloway, they move out Ryan McLeod, and they replace those guys with Jeff Skinner and Victor Arvidsson. And I thought Arvidsson would be a better player. Yeah. So my point is, they spent millions of dollars in reinvesting in Skinner and Arvidsson, and could have invested in Broberg in constant negotiations and just decided, nah, we'll just roll the dice and see how it goes. I think, Marty, to your point, there are general managers, I had one who shall stay unnamed from the Western Conference, who said he was so frustrated with the trade deadline and the fact that he couldn't get any traction that's what he's going to try and do. He's going to try and nail somebody down with an offer sheet. But, you know, where are these players coming from? And most general managers, most clubs would say that unless they don't have a choice, they're going to match on that player.
Yeah, I'll name you a couple of people. Keandre Miller in New York. There's Bo Byram in Buffalo. Noah Dobson.
Those teams aren't going to match on these guys.
Who knows? Matthew Nyes. Matthew Nyes.
What? You don't think that Toronto's going to, like...
Of course yeah, they will, match
but money. It's still
but
fun.
But you're going to make them spend more and get competitive advantage. That's the whole point.
I get it, but it doesn't happen. It happened one time.
We're saying it will happen.
It will happen. Let's go. Dregs, you're an insider. I hope you're right. You make it happen. I know you can.
I hope you're right.
You make it happen.
there are quality restricted free agents, so it's not the quality of the available players. It's just that it's fantasy land because it almost takes the perfect environment, which was established, and the Oilers left themselves vulnerable. They did. Yeah. Any team, like whether it's Matthew Nyes, Bo Byram, like why would Buffalo just let that happen?
Well, yes.
speaking of Edmonton's vulnerability, what a tough night for them last night with star power out, star power leaving, and then the goaltender leaving.
I know, crazy. I haven't dug deep on what the expectation is. I'm just going by some of the feedback that I got first thing this morning. There's more evaluations and testing. You know, that's always the standard within a 24-hour window of players getting hurt. It doesn't sound like any of it is going to be too taxing, as in more than day to day. But that's kind of where you're at as well. You know, I think Edmonton is a team that is still a little precarious in the sense that, yeah, they're a playoff team, but they still want to kind of get their mojo back before the playoffs creep. So I don't think you're going to see much in the way of load management, unless in this case, you don't really have a choice. You know, Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, Skinner left the game, you know, those are important pieces, obviously, to the success in the postseason of the Oil. So maybe they rest them if they have to. That might happen organically here, just given the extent of the injury. But it doesn't sound like any of it is long term.
Dregs, you have to fly, and essentially so do we. Thank you.
I'm going to continue working on my list. Gabe Vilardi, Marco Rossi. There's names out there. I'm working on the list.
Lots of names. Doesn't make them real.
Oh, my gosh. Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN. Have a great weekend, Dregs.
You too, guys.
All right. We're back after this. Nathan Pache from the Amateurs joins us next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Two games for the Sabres this weekend, both afternoon affairs, Saturday and Sunday. The Amerks, Marty, have 3-3, including 2 home games tonight and Sunday. Amerks assistant coach Nathan Pache is with us. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks, Duffer.
It's a busy, busy weekend, and you're missing a few guys. Obviously, Kozak and Murray are up with the Sabres right now, but you feel like your group is maybe past this flu bug that's been going around?
I hope so, yeah. Metsu was the last one to get it, and Kozak got it when he was with Buffalo. So it crushed Leo, too. I don't know if you guys saw, I couldn't coach in Laval. He couldn't leave his hotel room. So we're hoping that's passed, but it seemed like it's like every week somebody else was dropping. It wasn't like we had 6 or 7 at one time. It was just one guy after the next. And there hasn't been anything since Matt, so hopefully that's the end of it.
Now, is this like, I mean, it's bad. You don't want anybody getting sick and missing players. But was that a chance for you to maybe take a look at other guys in different roles? And did it open some doors maybe to say, hey, I mean, there's a couple guys here that we can play in a situation if it presents itself in the playoffs or down the stretch at the end of the year?
Yeah, we're lucky. We have a lot of depth in both positions in forward and D. So we're fortunate that when guys went down, we were able to plug other guys in, and they did great. I think any good team that you're on, if you don't have depth, if you can't win with guys out, especially in the American League, you can lose players to call-ups, injuries. You kind of get hit double two different ways. So the depth is extremely important, especially at this time of the year. And a lot of guys stepped up and played key roles.
Who stands out for you this year? We've obviously had Coach Leone on quite a few times here on Sabres Live, but would love to hear your insight on guys that have really stepped up and stood out.
Well, we've had a bunch of guys that have having really big seasons. Obviously, Metz and Klager having big point years. But you look at Rathbone and Ryan Johnson; those two guys have been really solid for us. I think RJ has really taken a step as a pro this season in consistency in his game. And you know, the young guys, Novikov and Komarov, both have been excellent as well. So, as a whole, our D core, we've been pretty fortunate. The consistency that they've brought throughout the years. And now you add Brännström in, into the mix, somebody with a real high-end talent. And I'd say his start's gone pretty well, considering he's got 3 goals in 2 games as a D-man.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But I want to tap in on the defense a little bit more, because Duffer and I have been looking at what's game one next year going to look like for the Buffalo Sabres. And obviously, they re-signed Jacob Bryson yesterday to a one-year deal. But there could be an opportunity for some of the guys that you're coaching right now to maybe, you know, show well in camp next year and get an opportunity to play in Buffalo. Who are those guys that the fans here going down to watch the games in Rochester and in the playoffs have to keep an eye on? And you think that if not next year, at some point in the near future, will be part of the blue line on the Sabres?
Well, I had mentioned Ryan Johnson. I think he's proven that he can do it night in, night out. Last year, he had a couple ups and downs, but you could see it was there. The potential was there. And this year, he's just taken his level of consistency and really turned into a dominant defender. He's an excellent skater, and he played a lot of games in Buffalo the majority of the season last year. Mm-hmm. So the up and down was difficult. He's been with us for most of the year, and I think he's really a guy that's proven that he's probably ready to make that next step. I think when you're a defenseman, you as a coach, you want somebody that's reliable and you know what you're getting every night. And I think he's turned into that player for us here. And I think he can do that at the next level too.
When you mentioned Coach Leone not being able to coach in those games in Laval, what was that like for you on the bench? And obviously, for those who don't know, just a couple of excruciating, heartbreaking losses there against Laval.
Yeah, those were tough. They just giving up those third period leads. And that rink, I don't know if you've been there, Duffer. It's for the American Hockey League, it's electric. It's got a real NHL feel. Sold out every game we played there. So you give them any kind of momentum, it's like the fans take over and you can kind of feel it on the bench. And I think it was a good learning experience, especially we might see them in the playoffs. That could be a big series that you have to kind of contain those emotions and not let the crowd and try to do too much. Because then you could tell their team feeds off it as well too. So those were tough, especially the one with 40 seconds left. It was just a silly breakdown, and you know, those things happen. But we've been good all season with third periods. It was kind of a little dip, something that we hadn't had trouble with. So it's good to get that stuff out of the way before playoffs, because you know, you want to fix those things earlier.
Pacher, let me ask you this. You talk about the rink in Laval. I believe it's dark there, too, a little bit. And anyway, when you watch it on TV, it has a little bit of a darker feel to it. But I used to love playing in Syracuse. I used to love playing in the old Hershey building. There were some buildings like this, like the old Cincinnati Gardens was awful but great at the same time. What's your favorite, like, road building? Now, obviously, you know, the Blue Cross Arena is fantastic, but what is your favorite road building?
I would have to say Laval. I don't think in our league anything really touches that atmosphere, especially when you add to the fact that they're sold out most games and the sound system, everything in it. It's
all the French
electric.
Speaking. It gets you going. It reminds you of like our nights out in the clubs in Montreal, Pacher. That's what's happening.
No, it's not. It's the hot dogs.
Yeah, that too.
Well, what?
I'm old now. That's what I get excited about.
What's Cleveland like? Because obviously they play in an NBA arena, and it's got, again, all the amenities, and they have done incredibly well attendance-wise. So what, you know, comparably, what is it like?
Yeah, it's similar. Obviously, it's an NBA facility, and they have the big screen, and they do very well. We were there for the teddy bear toss night, and that was a bit of a gong show because they hit the back of the net, and the fans just started throwing them. They're trying to tell them to stop throwing them. They didn't score. But they've done a great job. I remember when they were with San Jose, when I started, they'd have like, you could sit on the bench and count the fans in the stands. There was maybe 300-400, which is crazy to think now. They'll get 15,000 fans. Mm-hmm. So they've done a really good job. I don't know what they've changed with their marketing since they've gone to Columbus, and it's turned into a great place to play. And we, fortunately, we've done well there so far this season.
Yeah.
How do you manage like the 3-on-3 as a coach? Like it's hard for the players, but you get into a rhythm. Do you look at the ice time like after the second period of game one, thinking, hey, we have to pull back on some guys? Like, is there a managed like expectation going into like 3-on-3?
Yeah, there. Especially, it's going to be with their forward group going 7-on-11 tonight. There's going to have to be more managing on Leo's end of the things with 7D. You know, I got lots of bodies, so I'm not too concerned about anybody getting too much ice time. It's more making sure everybody gets enough ice time with that rotation. But it's probably a situation where we can't do that all weekend because you'll see some forwards. You know, you look at Noah Oslin, who plays both specialty teams first line, that, you know, you can't have him playing 22 minutes, three games in three nights. So it's definitely something we got to monitor and just see, hopefully keep the guys with fresh legs. And we've been good about giving days off. We just had a nice little break, so hopefully they're fresh going into this stretch.
Hey, collectively, as a coaching staff, what is the process and debate like when you get into shootouts this year? Because it doesn't appear like you have a set order, and you've certainly worked some defensemen in reasonably early in some of these shootouts too. So I'm just curious what the dialogue is like and the approach in it.
Well, what happened is we lost those two shootout games, and so we did a bunch of shootouts in practice. And you see the guys that went last game were the guys that were scoring in the practice shootouts because we just had to, you know, it wasn't working, so we wanted a few different looks. And Jack Rathbone was electric in practice. He just scored every time, and we put him in, and he ended up scoring the game winner. So sometimes those things, you just got to find out. You never know who's going to be good in a shootout. It's not a normal hockey thing, and sometimes guys will surprise you. I remember I played in Grand Rapids, and Brennan Evans was big stay-at-home D-man. I think he had one goal on the season in like 2 years. Great player, but not a goal scorer, but he was excellent in the shootout. So it's just the weirdest thing. You just sometimes you got to look at it in practice and see if some guys have one or two moves that always work.
Do the coaches take part in the shootout in practice? I know Vinny wants to. He wants to go out there and show everybody that he can still do it. What's your move, Pacher?
Low blocker. You know, Marty, I get you every time.
Oh, no, I mean, the book has been, I used the book for like to start the fireplace. It's been burning. So
it's a bestseller.
That's a long time ago.
Pacer, thank you.
Yeah, I got one move. It's low blocker. If the goalie takes it, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, you got 3-on-3 this weekend. We really appreciate the time. Enjoy Bills Day on Sunday at Blue Cross. That should be an awful lot of fun. Good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Good seeing you.
Bills Day, of course, you know, if you're in Rochester, this is a huge weekend. The team has been so good. We're rapidly winding down this regular season. And Amherst.com/Bills Day to find out more about this Sunday afternoon tilt with Utica in town, Marty. This is a huge weekend. They, after those two games against Laval and then being off for a little bit, you know, the Rocket have separated themselves. They're 7 points now up on the Amherst. But for you know, Nathan and you know, Vinny and Coach Leone, like this is, especially with some of the guys up with the Sabres, right? Like this is a really interesting time to kind of maximize the points where you can. But also you could tell like they're already looking for how to be when the playoffs start.
Yeah, and I mean, the AHL is hard as a coach. Imagine the ECHL is even harder because when the NHL club calls people up, then you get the AHL club that brings, you know, players, and you're stuck with not having another farm system. Mm-hmm. So you are scrambling to put a roster together. So, but it is tough. But it gives an opportunity to a lot of players to respond and to play in different situation. And so that's why sometimes you have guys that are going to make really good AHL career. And now playing a career in the AHL, think of Jody Gage and those guys that have been so good in the AHL. Well, imagine if they were making the money they could make now, because the AHL is getting paid good money too now. So it's totally different. So, you get an opportunity. Maybe you're adding 3, 4, 5 years to your AHL career and it works for you.
Absolutely. It's truly incredible just how many players have been able to, like, I always look at it like, well, what are you going to do in the real world compared to what you can be making in the American, just the American Hockey League, you know, like it's,
it can't compare. I mean, no. There's guys that make careers in the AHL making $400,000-$600,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can play until you're like Cal O'Reilly played 1,000 games in the AHL. Like
almost never
happens.
Right.
And he's still making bank. No, he's not making $6 million a year like his brother is, but he's doing a lot better than a lot of other people, and that maybe didn't get the opportunity.
Yeah, it's cool. And obviously, best of luck to the Amherst this weekend as they have Charlotte, and they're in Syracuse on Saturday and then home to Utica on Sunday. We still have a ton to recap from the NHL last night and look ahead. We'll try to rapid fire that when we continue on Sabres Live after this.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres road trip continues Saturday and Sunday afternoon. You'll see it on MSG and hear it right here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Bandits are home tonight. Amherst are home tonight and Sunday. And we are going to try and rapid fire through the rest of the show some of the major stories or unknown stories from last night. I mean, I did lead with, you can't make this stuff up. So, Marty, yep. I unearthed this on goaltending. Since mid-January, goaltenders who have played 8 games or more. There have been 54 such goalies. The best save percentage belongs to Jake Allen.
Yep.
The 53rd out of 54 belongs to Jacob Markstrom.
Jacob Markstrom.
How is that possible on the same team?
Yeah, well, and the Devils gave one up yesterday. They look to be in control against the Flames, and the Flames end up coming back down to score late and clinch at 5-3. And look, it puts the Flames now in a spot where, you know, that battle in the Western Conference is crazy. The Flames are 2 points behind St. Louis, who beat Vancouver in overtime. Vancouver is a point behind St. Louis. So there's a big battle. And Utah, with the 2 points, is 4 points back still of the St. Louis Blues.
All right, you're next. Go.
Well, I'll go with the great eight. Alex Ovechkin scored a goal, 7 away now. And, I mean, Sabres play the Washington Capitals on March 30th. It's Nick Backstrom that said not only would Wayne Gretzky travel to follow Ovechkin as he chases the record, but Nick Backstrom's the duo. I mean, he's in his will. He's in his life insurance. So he's going to be following him to be there when Gretzky passes, when Ovechkin passes Gretzky.
There was an unfamiliar but still real goal-scoring record set in the NHL last night. Tampa Bay has won 3 in a row, and Brandon Hagel scored his 32nd goal of the year. That is a new NHL record for a player who does not have a power play goal. Unbelievable. 32 goals without a power play goal. Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Hagel.
Yeah, Brandon Hagel, he's having a fantastic year, and that's why Tampa is battling, right? Tampa won, the Leafs won, the Panthers won, so it's a chase to the top of the Atlantic. And those three teams, the Leafs beat the Rangers, Tampa, as you mentioned, beat the Stars, and Florida won nothing against the Blue Jackets. There is a chase, not only for the last playoff spot, or maybe two, because Ottawa looked awful last night. But there's a chase for the wild card. There's a chase in the Atlantic for the top spot.
Crushing loss for the Jackets, but they did get a point. They've lost 5 in a row. They lose 1-0 to Florida. Bobrovsky has shut out his old team 3 straight times, and the Jackets have lost 7 of 8. They've been shut out 4 times in the 8 games. They scored 1 goal on a 4-game homestand, and to add even more to that pile, Marchenko took a puck over the glass penalty with 30 seconds left in regulation, and they lose 1-0 on a power play goal by Barkov. My goodness, you can't make this stuff up.
You can't make this stuff up. The Canadians lost in overtime to the New York Islanders, so that race in the Eastern Conference playoffs is kind of crazy, but the feel-good story of the day, Duffer. So Brendan Gallagher was messaged on X with a fan because we found out that Gallagher lost his mom to cancer just recently. So he said, hey, I have this jersey from warm-up on Hockey Fights Cancer from 2022 before they stopped doing the warm-up jerseys. And it was Gallagher's jersey, and inside it says, I fight for mom. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to give it to you. Let me know the place. And I feel like it. So Gallagher responded, how about a jersey swap last game of the year at the Bell Center? So this fan will be on the ice last game of the year, taking Gallagher's jersey from the game, giving him the Hockey Fights Cancer jersey. Unbelievable. Just a fantastic story. I hope the Canadians make it so that the buzz in the Bell Center would be like just through the roof.
Wow. There's 45 seconds left and I'm speechless.
Well, you know, there's some good people in the world and we need, there's so many bad stories out there. I love when we have a good story and we can point it out. And because I'm wearing my Bald for Bucks t-shirts from last year, I believe. Anyway, I got two more shows with hair on, Duffer. I got two more shows with all of this on and then it's coming off on Tuesday night. So you better be watching and donating because it's going to be fun.
Your hair is not quite as gnarly as last year, but the fact that you've made it look like that, and I would have never guessed that last night when we worked together, is pretty impressive. So Bald for Bucks on Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow. Sabres and Wild.